Community centers like the YMCA in Bayview Hunters Point work to create alternatives for young people who might otherwise turn to crime. And the hard work these rec centers have been putting in might be paying off. Juvenile crime in California has been steadily declining for several decades, reaching an all-time low in 2010. What hasn't changed much, however, is the disproportionate number of youth of color who are being incarcerated. This is the focus of organizations like the W. Hayward Burns Institute. The San Francisco-based nonprofit has been working for years to help counties remake their juvenile justice systems so they're equitable. It's going to become more and more important as California begins to phase out its statewide youth prison system in favor of county alternatives. It's a controversial proposal from Governor Jerry Brown, and one that's likely to be implemented by 2014. KALW News Director Holly Kernan sat down with Burns Institute founder and Executive Director James Bell to talk about the closure of the Division of Juvenile Justice.
Currently, there are between 1,000 and I think about 1,300 young people, and they are supposed to be those children with serious emotional problems or such serious offenses that being brought back to the camps and ranches of the local counties is not considered to be a viable option for them. And their days are 23 hours in, depending upon the facility. Their days.
Wait, so they're locked up 23 hours a day?
Some portion of those young people are definitely locked up 23 hours a day. Others are in dormitory settings. They are separated in a variety of categories that I believe enhance violence, north-south, blue-red, those kinds of categorical.
So just like San Quentin, for example.
Absolutely. And if you were to go, you wouldn't really see a huge difference in terms of what about their youthfulness makes these places different. And so the one thing that you can say is they will be in, for those young people that have serious mental health issues, they will be in a continuous program for a significant period of time. So there is a consistency there. But that's about, I think, all that you can say about it. And no one that believes that it should exist in its current fashion thinks that it should exist because it's so great. They're just concerned about what the option is for bringing these young people back home. So even the proponents of DJJ are not saying, well, we're a proponent because you're really destroying a great program. They're just saying
we don't know what else to do.
So let's, and this way we know that those communities are safe.
So hypothetically, say you were in charge of the DJJ, the Department of Juvenile Justice. What would you do?
I would start to realign and try to figure out a way to have the same kind of programming in communities close to home. So I would look
and realignment is what we're doing with the adult prison system, which is, sending most offenders back to the local level.
You could call it devolution. You can call it from far away back to back home. I mean, however you want to phrase it, you could do that. But I would do it very systematically. So I would want to get a demographic profile of all the young people that are there. Which counties are sending us the most young people? And what is it that these young people present with that we need to deal with?
And the Department of Juvenile Justice has shrunk quite a lot in the last few years.
From
10,000 in 1997 to about 1,000 now. And then
built for about 6,000, running at 10, so tremendously overcrowded back in those days.
Yeah, and extremely criticized.
Correct.
What were the big criticisms?
The criticisms were that there was no treatment or services. It basically was
school for gladiators.
The whole point of the juvenile justice system is to make sure that we do some habilitation and some rehabilitation so that you won't go on to be an adult chronic offender. And that means that you're supposed to be there to be getting needs addressed that you've expressed as a juvenile. And so as a young person. And so essentially this was a place where it was guards in a pod, hundreds of young people in dorms, and if anything happened, the guards would throw tear gas left, throw tear gas right, and call for backup or the SWAT team. And so you would have to declare a gang affiliation to be protected. It was just horrible. There was really no real interactive model between the young people and the people that were supposed to be serving them. And so it just became custody and control. And as we know, there were beatings, there were deaths, there were absurd instances where kids with special education needs were supposed to get education, but the facilities people thought they were too dangerous. So your classroom was this cage that was, it was like supposed to be a classroom. Literally, you can imagine the absurdity that has to happen when you are non-interactive and you go to custody and control. And so that's what it was.
And you're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm speaking with James Bell. He's the founder and executive director of the W. Haywood Burns Institute, which works to ensure fairness in the juvenile justice system. And so now, James, the call is to shut down the Division of Juvenile Justice altogether. Why is that happening now, do you think?
There have been calls to shut down these facilities for many years.
Yeah.
And the reasons were what we just talked about. Treatment wasn't right. It was extremely expensive for that kind of treatment. Recidivism rates were crazy in the 60 and 70% range. And so it was like, why are we doing this? But those arguments had no salience because fear, the way politicians frame public safety, it just got no traction. Literally, because of the state's fiscal crisis, is the reason that folk are looking at why shouldn't we do something differently? Now, in fairness, the populations were going down. And I believe that's because locally, the locales were beginning to see that sending their young people away to the youth authority as it was then wasn't productive, wasn't helpful. And so they began to, there's a movement out there in the youth justice field to look at rational policies to become less anecdotal and more based on data and objective screens and probation violation grids and those kinds of things that resulted in less counties sending young people there anyway. And you could really see a north-south split. Southern California being the ones that are most sending, and Northern California sending least.
Sending fewer people to the CYA.
To the CYA. Uh-huh. And so the CYA is
so that sort of gave it a sense that we don't need this.
That's right. And the CYA was also unaffordable in its current construction. So once it's like, we cannot afford these recidivism rates and this expense at the state level, where the county is bearing very little to no expense, we cannot afford this.
So is there a danger here? A lot of people are advocates of shutting down the Division of Juvenile Justice. Is there, though, a danger that young kids are going to be sent to adult prison?
There's always danger. There's always unintended consequences. And I think it's important for those questions to be in the forefront and for people to keep an eye on what's happening. This is not an all-win-win situation. So you're right. We all know that oftentimes justice policy is determined by local department heads. So whether you, for example, sent young people to the adult system with Proposition 21 or any of those things are a decision made by the head prosecutor in those counties. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if we do bring them home, it is incumbent for people to say, we are watching you, prosecutor, to see if you're going to now send our young people into the adult system. And what is the rationale for doing that? Because public safety is not a rationale when you have expense and a recidivism rate like we have in California. It's not working. So this whole notion of tough on crime, it's up to the local people in that community to raise this issue of, well, why are we sending them to the adult court? What are we getting for that? Are we just getting retribution and a pound of flesh? And is that what you're saying as the DA? Well, if we live in the communities these people are coming from, we're not saying that's what we want. So I do think advocacy will always be required. We must always be vigilant all the time when it comes to social justice.
That's James Bell. He is executive director and founder of the W. Haywood Burns Institute, and he works to ensure fairness in juvenile justice. So, you know, according to the Violence Policy Center, Alameda County has one of the highest youth homicide rates in the state, second only to Monterey County. What are you seeing being done in places like Oakland to deal with this, you know, kids killing other kids?
Yes. My sense is that in terms of Oakland, I feel that they are hamstrung. There's a new police chief there. This has been a neighborhood that has been had youth homicide at a alarming rate for a while.
You're talking East Oakland.
I'm talking about the city of Oakland, mm-hmm. right? And so my sense is that they are at a quandary about what to do. And I don't think there are any magic bullets or answers, but one thing I do know is that you have to engage the young people that are participating in these acts themselves and their communities in beginning to solve these problems. Unfortunately, Oakland has not been able to get past suppression in order to get to intervention and engagement. Because the urge for suppression from the citizens is powerful.
So what do you mean when you say that?
I mean that the theme is suppress. You know, we got the 100 blocks that Mayor Kwan has talked about, and there's this notion of we can't intervene until we get it under control, meaning suppress the crime, do what it takes for suppression.
Well, and when you talk to people living in those neighborhoods, that's a lot. That's sometimes what they're saying.
Who wants to be in an unsafe
absolutely.
Neighborhood is absolutely true. But what I'm saying is that the two have to live together. You can't suppress, you can't arrest, you can't public service announcement your way out of these kinds of issues that have violence at these rates. You have to intervene and engage people who are a part of this issue.
But isn't that what Measure Y has done with the ceasefire project and with putting outreach workers on the street at midnight? Isn't that what they're trying to do?
That's a start, absolutely. But clearly, it needs much more scale.
And what do you think does work in terms of violence prevention? And can you point to some concrete examples?
I think it's very hard. But when it's framed as violence prevention, as opposed to neighborhood well-being, then I think we have set ourselves up to fail. Because violence is a byproduct of hurt people hurting people. And so what we need to do is, in a real way, invest in those communities. And actually, those are the communities that are first cut. Those are the communities. And so you can't prevent violence in the context of a larger deprivation of neighborhoods and societies, which they can see. And so to me, you have to engage that. So that's right. Take those 8 blocks, take those 10 blocks, and get people what they need in terms of services. That, I believe, is the best violence prevention. Hard to do, takes courage, and it takes investment.